You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of August 9th, 2016, and episode number 277. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, we are back again. It's August. The dog days of summer are upon us. And I know I'm panting like a dog. It's hot. It's been hot. It's staying hot. And it's humid, too. But, hey, I'm not going to complain because winter is just around the corner. So what's going on this week? Kind of a weird week. A lot of weird stories, big stories, semi-big stories, and a lot of stories that I'm surprised are not being carried by the mainstream paranormal news outlets. You know, the bloggers and the Anomalist and Unexplained Mysteries, all those places. There's a few stories that kind of escape the headlines that we're going to talk about tonight. Well, I guess I'm going to talk about it, and you're going to sit back. Put your feet up, grab a glass of wine, whatever your taste is, and just relax and listen to my droning voice. Well, this week's news includes Pokemon Go. It's back in the news again, and this time it helps a couple see a cryptid. And we're going to talk about the Loveland Frog. It's a local story here in Ohio, and 14 extinct creatures that might still linger. Wow, a countdown. Countdowns are kind of unusual in August, but we're going to do it anyway. We're going to talk about the UFO over the St. Louis Gateway Arch. I have a little bit of inside information about that. Well, heck, this is the Paranormal News Insider, so we should have some inside news, I guess. Plus a UFO chase in Ireland. Uh-oh. And that one's led by police. That's going to be a big story, right? And we're going to talk a little... How could I say this without getting us fined? A little BS in the ghost field. And the Earth is about to get rained on by rocks, i.e. the Perseid meteor shower. That's an interesting thing. I actually saw a few last night. I was out walking. Clear skies. I figured, why not? And a story that was submitted by somebody here in the chat room. We're going to talk humpback whales. I've seen this story for a while. You might have read it. I think it's a pretty neat story, and even though it's not paranormal, we're going to talk about it anyway. Why not? Heck, love animals here on the Paranormal News Insider. So this week's is brought to us by the Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually-based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMHS schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit TFU University. I guess it's tfuniversity.org. TFU is one of the educational outlets for Paranexus Anomalous Research Association. Okay, now I paid the bills. I had a weird thing this morning. I was up while I was on, I don't know if I was on Facebook. I was on Facebook this morning, 10 o'clock in the morning. This is my weekend. Today is my Saturday. And if to further confuse you, I was talking to Jack Tessier, who's the young up-and-coming cryptozoologist out of Australia. And I covered a story about him finding tracks here on the Paranormal News Insider a while back, a few months ago. And so kind of became friends with him and we chit-chat back and forth. And he wanted to let me know there's a conference coming up down there in New South Wales. But it was weird because I already know about the whole time difference because of when I was in Paranexus. Well, I'm still in Paranexus, but we used to have board meetings. They weren't boring meetings, but they were board meetings with the members of the board of directors, and one of which, Ingrid Irwin, who is a EVP specialist, probably one of the best in the world, let alone Australia, she would have to join us, so we would try to adjust our hours. So I'm well aware of the time difference, and it was weird because I know they're 14 hours ahead. So at 10 o'clock this morning, he was talking – at 10 o'clock today, which is Tuesday, he was talking to me from 12:05 on Wednesday morning. Weird. So I was talking to him in the future. So I traveled – time traveled today, which is cool. Yeah, all that for that. But anyway, there's a conference coming up. I don't normally talk about conferences outside of North America. I try to stay to any conferences that are going on in Canada, United States. I know Mexico is North America, but I don't really hear too much about conferences down there. So I don't really talk about that too much. But for me to do worldwide would be a lot of work, especially with the amount of stuff that happens in Europe. And Australia is kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a finicky market as far as these conferences and conventions are concerned. I don't really usually see a whole lot. When they do have them, they're huge. This one's going to be interesting. The ACRO, Acro Australian Cryptozoology Conference. And it's going to have two guys here, it looks like. Let's see. Well, I know the one guy off the top of my head, Rex Gilroy, who is the cryptid specialist in Australia. He's 60 years. This guy has been investigating, researching the Yowie, which is the Australian version of Bigfoot. He's going to be speaking down there. And Gary Oppett, who is a wildlife expert and has decades of field research. And he's also an author, radio host on ABC North Coast. That's a cool conference. I wish I could get out there. That would be pretty much impossible. That would be a long flight. The ACRO Australian Cryptozoology Conference is going to be held on Saturday, August 27th. So if you're listening in the future, that's going to be in Greta, New South Wales, a few days. I think he said 17 days from now. He's excited. Jack is going to be there, and he's going to probably be hanging out with Rex Gilroy. I would be too. Guy's probably got a ton of knowledge, probably the top researcher down there. And I have quite a few mentors I like to talk to here in the U.S. as well. Speaking of which, wow, what a segue. I will be speaking at the 4th Annual Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event. That's going to be August 20th, so a week ahead of time, so maybe I'll fly down to Australia. That's going to be held in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. John Ventry, who is a huge guy in the UFO world, the MUFON state director for Pennsylvania. Stan Gordon, who's, I would consider him a mentor of mine. He's, wow, what a researcher. He, again, 50 plus years for him as well. Started out with the Kecksburg case, and he's probably the leading expert in Southwest Pennsylvania, if not all Pennsylvania, dealing with UFOs and Bigfoot sightings, as well as UFO Bigfoot sightings together. And guys got tons of case reports. It's amazing too when you my table has been next to Stan at least twice this year, maybe three times. No, just twice. Actually, no, three times. Yeah, we've been pretty close. If not one table between us. And it's amazing to see the people walk up to his table, and he just gets these cases like constantly. All these people just giving him information. He's always jotting stuff down and getting phone numbers and getting cases and getting information, which is awesome to watch. And there'll also be some local speakers talking about weather, strange stuff. And I wasn't really sure what I was going to talk about. I don't think I'm still not sure. Better hurry up though. I only got a week and a half to go, but probably going to talk a lot of the strange things in Pennsylvania as far as the cryptids that exist there, the ghosts, hauntings that are there, as well as some of the UFO stuff. But obviously, Stan is the guy for that. John's going to talk about that too. Oh, and I forgot. Eric Altman will also be there. He is another leading cryptid investigator from Pennsylvania. Great guy. So I'm excited about that. Man, John, Stan, Eric Altman, those three guys are probably three of the biggest researchers in the state of Pennsylvania. And here I am. It's going to be fun. It's going to be cool. Awesome to be on the speaking schedule with those guys too. It's quite cool. What else is going on for me? Well, got another one in November, the Ghost Excavation Conference. Talk about more. We get a little closer to that. I'm not going to talk too much about that stuff, but I guess we're just going to jump into cryptid news. We're going to talk Pokemon Go. I don't know if anybody's out there is playing Pokemon Go. It's quite addictive. It's fun. It's interesting. And yeah, a lot of kids are playing it, but you know what? I see a lot of adults out there too. Grown men playing Pokemon. It's kind of funny. But then again, I thought about it. When I was in my 20s is when the games first came out. So we kind of grew up with this stuff. So we know, you know, our Bulbasaurs and Charizards and all those things just as much as these kids do. And, you know, I've had conversations with people and they say, you know, these kids don't know. They really don't know Pokemon. They didn't grow up with it like we did, but, you know, they did grow up with it to some certain extent. But it's a fun game. It's an addictive game. And we've heard a lot of strange stories in the news about dead bodies and people falling off of cliffs and things like that. But we've also seen some paranormal ties as well, which is interesting. And let me grab this headline here. I'm going to shove it in the chat room. And if you're not in the chat room, you're not in the chat room. You're missing out. Great information. People chit-chatting during the show, which is great. Laughing, joking, having a great time. So you're missing out on that, and you're missing out on the live broadcast. And I also throw in some links in here so you guys can look at the stories as I'm talking about it, get a visual representation as well as read these stories or bookmark them for later. And you know, just enjoy that. And I do post these links during the week on the Facebook page and when I feel like it on the Google Plus page. It's a little bit of extra work so you can follow along with what's going on. So Pokemon Go in the paranormal news. What is going on here? Well, obviously it's in the cryptid section, so it has something to do with that. It's an interesting story because I was already researching one story and I saw this Pokemon Go thing pop up. So essentially, this is kind of two stories in one, two for the price of one. And Sam Jacobs, this is this gentleman's name, him and his girlfriend, they were walking along Madera Road near Lake Isabella in Loveland, Ohio, when they saw the legendary Loveland Frog. Now, this just happened just a couple of days ago. Now, Loveland, Ohio is nestled just northeast of Cincinnati in southwest Ohio. The city is known for probably a handful of things, including being the birthplace of television host Jerry Springer. Wow, what a claim to fame. Being featured on The X-Files in Season 3, Episode 11, called Revelations. That one's about a boy who exhibits stigmata. Well, I don't have time to talk about that episode, but look it up. The city's not actually in it, just in name. Loveland is also known for the Little Miami River, as well as the local folklore story known as the Loveland Frog or Loveland Lizard. And it goes all the way back to 1955 with a purported sighting, which actually is kind of like local folklore. There's different versions of this depending upon who you talk to, and everyone has kind of their favorite version of which. But essentially, it involves a businessman who saw I think there was three of these frog-like humanoids standing near the Little Miami River. And one of them was holding a magic wand that shot sparks. Yes, a magic wand that shot sparks. Now, if that wasn't weird enough, fast forward to March 3rd, 1972. A police officer named Ray Schottky was driving carefully along an icy road in Loveland when a 3 to 4 foot tall creature that was described as being about 50 to 60 pounds scurried across the road and was illuminated in the car's headlights. Now, he stated that the creature was crouched like a frog and then stood up on its hind legs before climbing over the guardrail. That's freaky. 2 weeks later, another police officer, Mark Matthews, claimed to have seen the same creature lying injured or dead in the road. He got out of his car to move it off the road when he said it stood up on its hind legs and hobbled over the guardrail and then into the river. Matthews also stated that he fired a couple of shots at it, Doesn't say if he struck it or not, but I guess that's would be my normal reaction too. Jeez, what is that thing? Pop, pop, pop. Cool. Anyway, Matthews would later change his story and was purportedly quoted as saying, quote, "It was and is no monster. It was not leathery or had wet matted fur. It was not 3 to 5 feet tall. It did not stand erect. The animal I saw was obviously some type of lizard that someone had as a pet that either got too large for its aquarium, escaped by accident, or they simply got tired of it. It was less than 3 foot in length, ran across the road, and was probably blinded by my headlights. It presented no aggressive action," unquote. Well, that's from an interview, and it's highly debated whether or not he was being honest about that. So it actually added to the folklore of this story, the saga that's been going on in Loveland. So fast forward again to August 3rd of this year, where Sam Jacobs and his girlfriend encountered a giant frog on the shore of Lake Isabella, where he was able to snap a couple of photographs as well as take a short video. It's freaky. I don't know if you've seen it. I'll post a link here in a second. Jacobs said, quote, "We saw a huge frog near the water," unquote. I guess he wrote an email to the news station. I'm not sure. Anyway, he went on to say, quote, "Not in the game." So again, not in Pokemon Go. "This was an actual giant frog," unquote. So Jacobs and his girlfriend then went back to her house, where his girlfriend's parents informed them about the legend of the Loveland frog. So apparently they didn't know about this. I don't know how you wouldn't know about it living in Loveland. I mean, they don't really, again, Jerry Springer, the river, Loveland frog. Not much else going on, kids. That's all they have. So I don't know how they didn't know about it, but yeah. Anyway, let me throw this in the chat room here, and you'll have to scroll down in the story. So click on that story, and I think the video is at the top, and then you'll see a couple of photographs, stills, and you'll know why I'm not really excited about this or taking it completely seriously. Because personally, when you look at the picture, it looks like someone wearing illuminated safety glasses, which you can buy pretty much anywhere. They're pretty cheap. Squatting pretty much looks like he's actually in the river, if not just like next to it. So I don't know. I don't really hold much stock in this actually being a cryptid. I think it's just a mysterious photograph. Whether or not they had anything to do with it, I don't know. I'm not making that assertion here. But this latest sighting, as big as it is, I guess, I don't know. No one's really talking about it. Except for me, I guess. I haven't seen it really too many places. But that's not really the big news that came out. The big news that a lot of places have actually been talking about is Mark Matthews actually has come clean about the Loveland Frog story of 1972, his involvement in this, kind of to finish the story from what he kind of told. And I'm trying to remember the name of the book. There was a book. I have it somewhere. I don't see it on my shelf. It was like Mysterious Ohio or Strange Ohio, I think it was called. Let me look that up. Pretty sure it was Strange Ohio. Great book. Weird Ohio. That's what it was called. Weird Ohio. So this was covered in Weird Ohio, which I have somewhere. I don't know where. Interesting book that I can't remember. James. My gosh, I should know his name off the top of my head. But anyway, it was covered in this book. James Willis is his name. It also had Lauren Coleman that contributed to the book. So Weird Ohio is where this story kind of went into. Matthews does not really do too many interviews, but he was interviewed by James Willis. And so his words that appear in this book, his quotes from what he said. Now, many people, again, they argued whether Matthews' admission that the Loveland frog was just an iguana was whether it was real or not. It was highly debated. And a lot of people just thought it was, he just said it so he wouldn't be pointed at in the street, or just so he didn't lose all credibility as a human being, because it is a weird story. And yet now he's provided the conclusion to the story. So he said that the creature was 3 to 3.5 feet long and went under the guardrail, not over. And Matthews then shot the animal as he felt no one would actually believe what he saw. He then recognized that it was, in fact, just a regular iguana, except that it had lost its tail, which is why he didn't really recognize it as an iguana in the first place. I think it would be kind of weird to see something like this creeping around Ohio anyway. Well, he figured the cold-blooded creature was living near the water drainage pipes that pumped warm water from a factory that had used water to cool ovens. He also said that the animal was nearly dead before he shot it, which in, I guess in cold weather is more than likely. It's probably ready to die anyway. This iguana was more than likely just a pet that either escaped or was released due to its size, since the owner could no longer care for it, just as he'd said before. So now we know. And I guess he took the iguana, put it in his trunk, and took it back to the police station to show it off. So I wonder why this was a mystery for all this time, but it does kind of put a damper on the story. And pretty much all we're left with is the original 1955 sighting and the first 1972 sighting, although it was only a couple of weeks before Matthew's his sighting, so probably the same creature, so we can probably exclude 1972. So all we're left with is a magic wand-wielding frog. And, of course, our latest one. What is going on there? Yeah, again, it looks like somebody wearing illuminated glasses. If you look at the picture, you can see the glowing eyes reflecting off the water. That doesn't happen. If you have an animal that does have reflective eyes, that you take a picture and their eyes glow, it doesn't really reflect off the water. That's not how it works, really. So it's a little weird, and we'll keep an eye out there, or we'll keep an ear out. Something, we'll keep something out there to find out what is going on with this Loveland frog story. If it's legit, if it's a hoax, my guess is hoax, and I don't think that it's really going to pan out to be anything more than that, unfortunately. But again, I'll keep following up on this story to see what's going on with it, and we'll keep our eyes peeled. And what else? Cryptid news. Yes, 14 extinct animals that may still be alive. I was excited to read this. Although the website itself was very, how can I put this? Clickbaitish. Very clickbaitish. So when I saw the headline, I was excited. But then when I clicked on it, I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to be really bad. And it didn't turn out to be horrible. But I've actually kind of had to fill in the blanks with some of this stuff. Now, it's a story from a website called starpulse.com. Again, it's a clickbait website. And the story was written by a contributor, Effie Orfanides, who is a Bostonite, Orfanides, something like that. Orfanides, I don't know. Now, she's from Boston. She writes for Inquisitor and Examiner. Well, heck, who doesn't write for Examiner? Everybody writes for Examiner. Even I write for Examiner, along with the starpulse.com website. Her article of interest here is entitled 14 Extinct Animals That May Still Be Alive Today, and deals with some very popular cryptids. And again, when I didn't have high hopes for this, but when I was reading it, I was surprised at some of the names thrown on here. She did very good with the names. For the most part, there's a couple that are actually still alive that she kind of, I guess she didn't realize, but kind of bad research. So I filled in some of the blanks here. And coming in at number 14 is the thylacine. This carnivorous marsupial lived in Tasmania and Australia and died out on the mainland around 2,000 years ago, while the last living specimen died in captivity on September 7th, 1936 of exposure. Although there have been a lot of current sightings, not only in Tasmania, but as well on the mainland. I think they would have a better chance of existing on Tasmania, to be honest with you. Number 13 on her list is the Eastern Cougar, probably my favorite, kind of tied with another one that's on the list. I think the next one on the list. Yeah, the next one. The Eastern Cougar was declared officially extinct in 2011. Well, officially extinct here in the United States. Canada still has not listed it as extinct yet, which is good news. despite this large cat not being seen here in the East since the 1930s. The fate of the Eastern cougar is still debated, however. Specimens of cougars found in the East actually point to wandering cats from the West so far. Now, this is one of the cryptids that I like to study, that I keep looking for case reports here in Ohio, all over Ohio, because we seem to get them quite a bit. So I keep an ear out and an eye out for sightings here in Ohio to research, because I think they're still around. I think the Eastern cougar is still around, or at least that the Western cougar is here. I think they're starting to establish themselves. So anyway, number 12 on the list is another favorite of mine, the passenger pigeon. I was kind of surprised to see this one on the list, but I have not heard of stories. But doing the research on this story, I found that there have, in fact, been some sightings of passenger pigeons. Now, this was a pretty decent-sized bird for being a pigeon. It was more than a foot long, and unfortunately, it was hunted to extinction for its feathers. And many have reported seeing this this creature still flying around, although no sightings have been verified. The article also points out that the passenger pigeon makes a good candidate for revival from cloning. Cloning. I don't know about that. I'm not big on the whole cloning thing. Not big on that. But it would be cool to see a passenger pigeon. Back in their heyday, when they were still alive before we killed them all, they would literally be like a cloud flying through the sky. There was just so many of them. But unfortunately, we killed them for clothes and hats and shoes and gloves, stuff like that. So anyway, that's our fault. Sorry about that, Mr. Pigeon. Number 11 is the Javan tiger that lived on the Indonesian island of Java. That's where we get our website stuff. Until it was hunted to extinction in the 1970s. Again, rumors persist that they're still lurking. They're still around. But who knows? Who knows? Now, I'm going to take a very quick break. Hold on. Don't go anywhere. Don't walk away. Don't go to the bathroom. You won't have time. Just want to let you know you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, talking cryptozoology right now. And we're going to jump right back into our little countdown that we have going on of the top 14 extinct animals that may still be alive. Started out with the thylacine, the eastern cougar, the passenger pigeon, the Javan tiger, and now number 10 is the Baiji. Baiji, and that's spelled B-A-I-J-I, Baiji, which is a freshwater dolphin that lived in the Yangtze River in China. Now, the last known Baiji died in 2002, yet sightings have persisted, and while the dolphin is listed as critically endangered, it is believed to be extinct or will soon become extinct. Not enough of these, if they are still alive, not enough to continue to create living populations. And this is another one that we did it in. It's our fault. Pollution, overfishing, and the building of the Three Gorges Dam. Sorry about that, Mr. Fish or Mr. Dolphin. Our fault. Way to go, human beings. Number 8, the ivory-billed woodpecker. Another one of my favorites. This one has been declared extinct since the 1920s, yet sightings in Arkansas in 2005 and others have kept the hope alive, which is weird because there's another woodpecker that looks just like this guy. Yeah, I think we had a story that we talked about the ivory-billed woodpecker. A couple times I've talked about the ivory-billed. It's an interesting story, and you never know. Maybe they're still around. But again, the longer that we go without seeing one, odds are pretty bad. Now, number 7 is the coelacanth. The coelacanth. Well, despite the listing in the story, this one is still alive. I didn't know she knew this. I guess I knew it because it's something that I've studied and written about. It's one of the first story in my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist. And it's considered to be the greatest marine discovery of the 20th century. Oops. So nice try, but kind of messed that one up a little bit because it's still alive. It's not dead. Number six is the Wokeli Mbembe, which is thought to be a brontosaurus type creature. I love being able to say brontosaurus because for like 20 years, you weren't allowed to say it. You had to replace it with a potosaur, which always made me think of a big dinosaur smoking something. Anyway, brontosaurus living in or near the Congo River in Africa. I think there was a movie about that. Baby, I think was the name. Or was that something that like Richard Gere was in? I don't know. I think it was called Baby, with a little animatronic dinosaur was in the river. So that was kind of based on that, I'm pretty sure. Interesting. Anyway, not sure about dinosaurs still being around. That's a big stretch. Although we just talked about the coelacanth, so you can't discount it completely. Number five is on the list of extinct animals that may still be alive. The Mexican grizzly bear. Mexican grizzly bear. Okay. You don't hear much about him that much. The Mexican grizzly bear became extinct in 1964 after overhunting, although sightings, again, have persisted for years with no verifiable sightings. Grizzlies do live along the East Coast. And I think some of these sightings of the Mexican grizzly bear actually happened in the United States. So these could be mistaken for our grizzlies or our bears that lived for the West somewhere out there. You know where you're at. Number four brings us the Japanese river otter, which was declared extinct in 2012. Again, purported sightings continue. Number three, the woolly mammoth. This is another one that mankind had a part in. This Asian elephant relative died out around 2000 BC, although stories of a large shaggy beast persist. I guess in Russia was the biggest time that a lot of stories were going on, local folklore, in the 1800s. There's still rumors of them existing up in northern Canada, but I haven't heard much of that. Probably in about 12 to 15 years is the last time I heard any story about woolly mammoths in North America or even in Russia. Number two on the list is Megatherium, which is a very scary creature. Even though it's a sloth, I would never want to see one unless it's – I've actually seen bones of one. This is an elephant-sized ground sloth with giant claws, giant teeth. Went extinct about 10,000 years ago. Thank goodness. It's thought to be the largest mammal ever to walk the earth. Although sightings in South America persist and the stories of this folkloric animal, Mapinguari, are thought to be that of the Megatherium. So when we talk Gigantopithecus about Bigfoot, there's this folklore of the Mapinguari, and people think that it could still be these living Megatheriums running around. I guess they wouldn't be running at their sloths. Probably just kind of taking their time through the jungle. And last but not least, number one on the list of animals thought to still be alive, although considered extinct, the Megalodon. In our article, Effie states that the existence of this giant shark that died out 2.6 million years ago is questioned and is thought to be imagined by some. Well, but it actually exists. It is, in fact, a real find based on fossil remains. So I don't know why she's speculating that this is a speculative creature when it's verified. It's confirmed. It's got a scientific name that's full of vowels. The Megalodon became a confused topic when the Animal Planet chose this animal to be a follow-up to the Mermaids, the Body Found TV show that confused the heck out of everybody by saying that mermaids were real, and then followed it up with this Megalodon story that depicted the sharks as still being alive. But this story, it was like poorly researched. But I like the list. And there was only a couple of sentences with each one. So I guess he was just searching for the names of these creatures. But it does gather a great list of creatures. I'm not going to completely knock it down. And pretty much everything that I talked about here in the segment for this the story here are facts that I've researched since I started to find some issues when I was reading through it. and I wanted to provide you with the correct information. So if you do stumble across this story, I'm not going to throw it in the chat room because a lot of pop-ups and advertisements and stuff, but I promise I'll put that out on the Facebook feed sometime this week. And I think I'm going to actually start doing maybe two a day. I don't know, kind of up it up a little bit to get this news and information out to you a little quicker. So you don't have to sit there and wait all week long. And then I can start talking about some of these breaking stories, some of these big stories, like the one I'm about to talk about when they come up, and kind of keep you guys informed as we go along. But you got to have that hook, you know, like the news. Got to say something that's going to scare you or thrill you or want you to tune in, some kind of secret or some kind of inside information. So you want to tune into the show each and every Tuesday night, or at least download the podcast. So if I give you all the information, you don't need me at all. And I want you to need me. I know that sounds weird, but yeah. Anyway, let me just stop there. So UFO news, big story here, probably the biggest of the week. I don't know about the year. It's going to be up there, but it's kind of lost its traction already. But earlier this week, the internet lost its mind, literally lost its mind over this. People were really arguing about this. Now, I've thrown the original video in the chat room there. It's a little YouTube video of a guy with his phone up and down. The Gateway Arch in St. Louis. People are arguing back and forth about this online, on Facebook, everywhere. So a guy named Chase Rhodes was taking a break. I worked at a casino around 2 o'clock in the morning last Tuesday while working at the Casino Queen along the Mississippi River in East St. Louis, which is actually in Illinois. So he's in Illinois looking across the Mississippi River into St. Louis, Missouri. Okay, so he's looking west. So Chase saw and began to film a bright light that seemed to be above the Gateway Arch located across the river in Missouri. Rhodes is quoted as, I guess he's an independent cleaning consultant. Okay, cool job title. I wouldn't put that in a business card. Anyway, at the casino, and he typically takes his break every night between 2:30 and 3 o'clock in the morning. So on Tuesday morning, he saw the light and recorded it on his cell phone. He then did what anyone would do, any one of us out here. The next day, the next morning, he gets off of work. What's he do? Well, he contacts the local Fox affiliate, KTVI, Fox 2 Now in St. Louis, where he shared the video and he actually made it on the morning show. Wow. The National Park Service and nearby Scott Air Force Base had no information about sightings or complaints about lights in the sky, radar data, or anything else that would have actually helped. Thanks a lot, guys. Now, the Missouri branch of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, was then contacted, and Chief Investigator Joe Palermo began investigating immediately. And similar footage was also found on the Facebook page of nearby Martin Memorial Park, which is essentially next door to the casino. And it's weird because obviously this guy went on the TV show in the morning on the news. So it began to spread really quickly in the St. Louis metro area. So, hey, these guys got smart here over the Martin Memorial Park. They got the footage and they threw it on their Facebook page to get a little hit action on their Facebook page, which it worked. They did a good job. Whoever's in charge of that should be proud of themselves. They did good. But this actually helped create a unique situation. So there's not only one witness who filmed it, but now there's footage captured by another camera close by. Palermo stated, quote, "Pretty exciting, because the best thing about it is we have two different sources of the same object on the same date at the same time," unquote. A few people have stated that the object appears and acts like a drone, but Palermo says, no way. Having two pieces of footage is important, and while the two areas are very close together, which is kind of an issue, but at the same time, I think it actually kind of helps expose an important detail, which I noticed while viewing this. I don't know where I've used this before, but I've used this before, and it was just kind of like instinctual. When I saw this, I got a map. I put up a old school map, a road map. I actually got one out and was looking at it, and then I pulled one up on Google Earth and made a little bit of an important discovery, which I just passed on to Palermo earlier, a couple of days ago now. So when looking at the video initially, I felt that the light was closer to the observer. I kind of was looking at it as this is a drone. And the static camera also, I thought it was a little closer. So this camera at the casino, the guy was, I think he was a little closer to the arch. And the static camera in the park was a little further back. And it provided a different angle. Obviously, the casino was north and the park was a little bit south, but they were pretty close together. I would say, I can't remember, I have it written down, about 800 feet, if that, between the two, which isn't much when you're talking about almost a half mile, between a quarter and a half mile away where the arch is. So I call it the Rhodes footage and the Malcolm footage. So the bright light appears to be coming from directly above the arch in the Rhodes footage. So the guy that was at the casino, when you look at the video, the light pretty much looks like it's directly above the arch. Now the Malcolm footage, which is the park, I guess, is appears to be slightly left of center. So when you're looking at this, one is directly above, one is off to the left. So when you take you take and look at a map, you draw lines from each observation point, and where those two observation points, they go through where the actual object is seen, where the light in the sky appears, which is great with the arch because you kind of use that as a guide. So the point of which they see it, perception, and the point in which they perceive it to be, you draw a line from those two points and you continue it into infinity. So when those two lines cross, that is where your object should be. Now, I don't have access to all the perfect data that I would need to make this perfect. It's kind of an estimated guess, but it kind of gives us a realization of whether or not it was in front or behind. My guess was it was in front of the arch, but I was wrong. And that's why we do things like this. That's why we use science. That's why we use not just our hunches, our guesses, our gut feelings or whatever. We use perceptions. We use science. We use the data, and we let the data speak for us instead of us speaking for the data. So I did. I contacted Palermo, and he told me that this case is not an official MUFON case. So I hope to get some data, or some updates, I should say, on any data that he does discover. I've given him my work, and hopefully he'll reciprocate that. And we'll keep in contact with each other. We talked earlier today about this, and I'll keep you guys in the loop, obviously, as well. This is a really interesting thing, although I'm not going to get too excited about it. I still kind of think it's a drone, because when you draw the correlation, and I'm going to throw a little link here in the chat room. You guys are going to see this first. Now, this link, you follow this link, it's a really basic website. All there is a couple of pictures, and these pictures will show you what I was talking about. Each of the vantage points, so where the camera is, you're seeing the object. And then I put that on the map for you overhead, so those lines intersect, and you'll see I didn't update. I sent Palermo an updated one where I actually let the lines go into a little further where they actually crossed. But if you follow those two lines continuously, you'll notice that they will not intersect until just past the arch, not out of the park, just on the other side. So it's actually above, would probably be above Interstate 44 or slightly east of 44, not much. And if we notice the video when this thing, the light kind of goes out. So if this is a front-facing drone, they only have lights that are lit up in the front. If you're driving along 44 north and south, you're not going to see the light up in the sky. So I don't think people may have noticed this, although the light may have turned, because we do see it disappear for a second. So the light may have turned. And, well, those are people that are saying that it can't be a drone or is not a drone for different reasons. I have a YouTube video that actually shows drone footage in the exact same spot in which I feel that the UFO is seen. You don't even have to watch the video. You look at the static picture that pops up with this YouTube video. And if you continue to follow, although the drone would have to be a little bit higher, this would appear between the big arch, but a little bit higher. This is pretty much what I'm talking about, where this thing would have been. Not quite to 44, which is there on the right-hand side from this video, but certainly not over the river or in front of the arch. So that's just my observation. If I can get more information, like the actual latitude, longitude, where the actual videos were seen, and a little bit better video or the raw data of the video, so I can really determine exactly where this thing was in relation to the arch, I could probably get a better estimation. So this is going to be an ongoing story. Hopefully it turns out with some more information and some more data that I can pass along to you guys here on the show. And there was a police chase of a UFO in Ireland. Scary. And it's true. It happened. There is a video for it. And it's not CGI. It's real. I can vouch for that. I can verify it because I watched it. A UFO was chased in Ireland. It's true. But unfortunately, it was a low-speed chase through the streets of Gorey, Ireland. The UFO was created by a local artist, Ali Kamal Ali, who created the UFO from two electric scooters for a youth and arts festival. Now, it was kind of cool because Ali asked the police if they would help in making the event become aware by creating the video with the not-so-high-speed chase. And it's cool because the video has now been seen a million times. We'll watch it. Maybe we can boost it up to 3 million. It's a Facebook link, so I don't know if that would work here in the chat room. If you guys don't have Facebook, I have the original story, which I'll post here, and you can click on that and watch the video. It's pretty funny. It's pretty cool to see a police car chasing a UFO down the street. Anyway, what else do we have? Well, ghost news. This is another one that I did not see in the mainstream news, but I think it's pretty cool because it deals with a celebrity. Hugh Grant, the English actor and star of Four Weddings and a Funeral, Bridget Jones's Diary, and gosh, a bunch of other movies that I've never seen or have any interest in. Well, he is in hot water over some recent comments directed toward a ghost investigator. The comments came on The Late Show with James Corden last Thursday, and Bryce Dallas Howard was talking about her psychic abilities in being able to guess the sex of babies before they're even born. Then Corden asked Grant if he's ever been to a psychic. And then Grant goes into the story where he states that he has a Ghostbuster that comes to the house a couple of times a week. And he goes on to tell the story of how his son has seen ghosts for a while and how he's got a girl named Wendy Mandy that comes to the house. And when he was asked to explain what she does, Grant says that she, quote, had all those sticks and then her sticks went completely wild in his room, unquote. And then he said that Wendy felt such a strong force that she thought she may throw up. Grant then said, quote, I think it was all bullocks, and she went and she burned about 7 pounds of sage and banged a little drum and played an instrument or something and sang and then said all the spirits are gone, unquote. Now, I guess in England you can't say the B word, but we can say it here. I guess it's not. Well, we'll find out, I guess. Anyway, Grant asked his son the following morning how he felt, and he said there was still a little boy at his window. Thanks, Wendy. Well, Wendy Mandy was interviewed by the Daily Mail. I don't know who contacted who first, where she criticized Grant and said that the ghost did not disappear since he has a cynical attitude. So it's your fault. It's your fault. Many had used I should say Mandy had used a Peruvian rattle. I don't have one of those. I don't think I've ever seen a Peruvian rattle. And she also used a Tibetan singing bowl, which I actually have one of those and use one of those. Well, obviously I use it if I haven't, to change the sound frequency. I'm not sure what that honestly has to do with ghosts, but I do see her point about belief having something to do. Yet that should not be placed on Hugh Grant as a bystander in all of this. Now, Mandy went on to say, quote, "I only went to his house because I liked the person who recommended me a lot and because it was a small child and I wanted to help a small child. Otherwise, Hugh Grant would not be one of my clients. I don't treat cynical people. There's no point. It is actually quite a complicated subject. I can tell you I've studied feng shui for 10 years, amongst other things. People can trivialize it," unquote. Well, wow. Well, that'll teach him, Mandy. Yeah, I'm not sure what feng shui has to do with the paranormal. If you're redecorating his house for good luck and fortune, maybe that'll work. I don't know. Buy him some new square furniture, point it towards the door, buy him some plants. I don't know if that really gets rid of ghosts, Mandy. I really don't think that that's how it works. Maybe I didn't read that book yet. But I don't see what really that has to do anything. And that just kind of adds to what a lot of people do in the ghost field. It's kind of ridiculous. And some of the belief systems, we have to separate that from how we deal with clients. I mean, I do understand what she's trying to accomplish here, but it does seem like her beliefs are guiding her and surely not common sense or the ability to actually connect with the living is what she should be doing. Now, one other story I want to talk about is the meteor shower that's headed towards Earth. The Perseid meteor shower is going to take place this week, with the peak being on August 11th and 12th. But during this time frame, we could expect to see up to 200 meteors per hour. The Perseids are typically the best show of the year, and this year is going to be called an outburst, where more meteors will occur than normal. Now, a few factoids about the Perseid meteor shower. The space debris that you see streaking across the sky comes from the comet Swift-Tuttle, which orbits the sun every 133 years. That's the Swift-Tuttle. Don't say that 10 times fast. Typically, the Earth only grazes this debris field left over from the comet, but this year, thanks to Jupiter's gravitational force, the Earth will enter the center of the debris field and should encounter at least three streams. Bill Cook with NASA's Meteoroid Environments Office in Huntsville, Alabama, states about the debris field, quote, "Here's something to think about. The meteors you will see this year are from comet flybys that occurred hundreds, if not thousands of years ago, and they've traveled billions of miles before their kamikaze run into the Earth's atmosphere," unquote. The Perseid meteor shower is called the Perseids since the debris will seem to originate from the constellation Perseus. So again, the prime time to watch the Perseids is between midnight and dawn on the morning of August 12th. Be sure to get outside and allow your eyes to get used to the dark, which takes about 45 minutes or so. Now, you might think that your eyes adjust quickly, but I'm telling you, if you're out there for about a half hour, 45 minutes, you'll actually notice that you can see a lot better. And if you suffer light pollution in where you live, there is a Ustream channel that's going to be broadcasting the sky live. I don't know where it's coming from, and it's pretty cool. I watched it one year. We had storms during the Perseids. It rained like all week, so I watched the thing. But I've actually was outside last night and saw quite a bit of them already, and they were coming from all over the place, not just from Perseus, but they were streaking everywhere, and they seemed to come in clumps. I saw four or five right in a row and then stood there in the dark with my neck cranked up for about 10 minutes. I can't lay on my back. I get really dizzy. It's weird. Anyway, one last story here before the I do have the book of the week. I might have to skip it this week. We'll see. A topic that I've read from time to time, it seems to creep up, but it's far from paranormal. I have an interest in this because I have an affinity, especially for whales, let alone animals. Now, Dita, who's in the chat room, she's the senior executive advisor here at WCJV. She sent me a link that outlines a number of occurrences of humpback whales coming to the rescue of various animals being hunted by orca whales. I love orca whales. even more than humpbacks. So I don't know. I'm not going to choose sides here. But one such story happened in 2009 when a seal was knocked off by a chunk of ice by an orca, when a humpback came up from underneath and allowed the seal to actually hide on its belly. And when the seal began to slip off the humpback, it used its flipper to push him back on top. And a number of other stories, just incredible stuff here. And just from this particular link, it doesn't have all the stories that I've read. But they've kind of done a decent job of collecting these stories, but they really don't go into whys on all this is happening. Researchers don't really know. Now, the researchers suggest that the humpbacks are actually responding to the call of the orca. And they're not exactly sure what species is being attacked. Now, humpbacks get attacked by orcas, and especially with the babies, and they do come to the rescue for each other. But whether or not they know that these are seals and other animals or penguins or whatever, nobody really knows. Now, there's different kinds of orcas, which is important. An overwhelming majority of these instances happen between humpbacks and what's referred to as mammal-eating killer whales, and they refer to MEKWs in the if you read the data. And that stands for mammal-eating killer whales, which includes many transients, and transients are ones that just travel wherever the heck they feel like it, as well as orca that live in all the world's oceans. And usually these orca kind of stay in certain areas. You have the fish-eating killer whales that primarily eat salmon, especially in the Pacific Northwest. And part of the reason why I have an affinity for the story is I've been very fortunate to have witnessed a superpod back in September of 2014, where all of the JK and L northern resident orcas, all the pods, all three of those pods, came together as they entered the Strait of Juan de Fuca from the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Victoria, British Columbia. And there's another story floating around that kind of ties in with this about Granny. She's 103 years old. We actually got to see her a couple of times and kind of easily identifiable on her saddle. She has a saddle patch that's pretty easy to identify. She also has a little nick in her dorsal fin, which makes it easy to identify as well. So I've seen her, which is kind of really cool to see the story about her become mainstream. And that was a memory I'll never forget. So offshore varieties, they tend to stick out. And that's kind of what these stories are about, these ones that are just out to kill these things. But it's interesting to note that a lot of other animals do have this kind of, I don't know if it's instinct or this care and concern for other animals. Now, killer whales are the top predators in the ocean, but the humpback whale is not the only species to show altruistic or selfless behavior. We probably all heard of the dolphin. Dolphins help a variety of other species, and there have also been stories of helping humans as well. Wolves and wild dogs actually bring back food to each other that were not present at kills. Vampire bats, which is really disgusting, but they will actually regurgitate blood for other bats who have not been able to get a meal. The Egyptian plover birds eat little bits of food stuck in crocodiles' mouths, which I find amazing to watch. I think that's just really interesting. But it's a symbiotic relationship. Without the bird eating those particles of food, the crocodile would actually die, which is weird because they would get bacterial infections and things. So other animals protect similarly like the humpback, but I really find that that's a really interesting story. And I don't know, it's just weird to see that kind of behavior in an animal like that, that seems to just thrive on instinct, breed, eat, and play. So respect the whales, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I'll mention the book of the week. Won't really have a whole lot of time to get into this here. The book of the week this week is Flying Saucers and Science. I guess it was fitting because of the thing I was doing here with the Gateway Arch in Missouri. Talking science, Flying Saucers and Science. The scientist investigates the mysteries of UFOs. And if you've ever heard this gentleman speak, who is Stanton Friedman, if you've ever heard him speak, he is a great speaker. He knows his stuff, and he can sure talk, and he talks, and he talks, which is good. A lot of guests you get, they may only say a couple of words, a couple sentences, and then they kind of just kind of, you have to kind of get them going. I've had the fortunate chance to actually interview Stanton on a couple of shows. I think I was a co-host twice. And yeah, he knows his stuff, and he'll keep going and going and going. So he's an awesome researcher. He's very knowledgeable. He has an education, a very good background, but he has a good way of providing you the information in a way that you can kind of understand it. But he does, in this book, he kind of talks first person. So it's almost like kind of like having a conversation with him. It's like listening to him speak, and I actually hear his voice in my mind when I'm reading this book. There are parts that do drag on and on and on, and but it's worth the read. If you're into UFOs and you want to learn about science, flying saucers and all those things, definitely want to get a hold of this book. And I may touch a little bit on it next week as well. But the book of the week this week, Flying Saucers and Science, A Scientist Investigates the Mysteries of UFOs. Very, very thick book. I think it's been out for like 8 years now. Tons of great information. If you're into UFOs, you better read this book. So big thanks to Cindy, my producer, to Dita for helping the chat room and for the story. I appreciate that. And for everyone else tuning in, whether you're live or otherwise, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.